husband and wife and their children. And just want to read for you the from an article entitled "The Effects of Divorce on America" by the Heritage Foundation. And this particularly focuses on the children and its effect. Let me read from that. Quote, "Each year, over 1 million American children suffer the divorce of their parents. Moreover, half of the children born this year to parents who are married will see their parents divorce before they turn 18. Mounting evidence in social science journals demonstrates that the devastating physical, emotional, and financial effects that divorce is having on these children will last well into adulthood and affect future generations. Among these broad and damaging effects are the following. One, children whose parents have divorced are increasingly the victims of abuse. They exhibit more health, behavioral, and emotional problems, are involved more frequently in drug abuse, and have higher rates of suicide. Children of divorced parents perform more poorly in reading, spelling, and math. They also are more likely to repeat a grade and to have higher dropout rates and lower rates of college graduation. Families with children that were not poor before the divorce see their income drop as much as 50%. Almost 50% of the parents with children that are going through a divorce move into poverty after divorce." And that's just sort of the tip of the iceberg in terms of the effects of divorce, and that particularly focusing on the effect on children. But certainly it affects people that you know, and it's not just something that affects our society. It affects people within the church. It affects people within our church and our different congregations. It has affected my own family as well. As some of you know, I shared about my son when he came, and he's in the process of getting a divorce. And I learned firsthand how painful and how sad that situation can be. But it's not just a modern-day issue or problem. It's probably been a problem since marriage started in the Garden of Eden, all right? That certainly in Old Testament and New Testament times, divorce was an issue. And so I've been asked to preach on this topic, and I was noted that, oh, Pastor Enoch is out of town, so he, again, has given me the tough passage to deal with, which is okay, you know. That's why they pay me the big bucks, right, you know, to deal with these kind of big issues, you know. So it's fine, because I just want to share with you what God's Word has to say. And it's not my opinion, it's not my preference even, but it's what the Word of God has to say. So we'll be looking at the passage that was just read in Mark chapter 10. And you'll see the outline in your program. And the first major point we're going to be looking at in relationship to verses 1 and 2. And the first major point, I would say, it is the context for the Pharisees' question. The context for the Pharisees' question. And so let me read to you again verse 1 and 2. "And he left there and went to the region of Judea and beyond the Jordan. And crowds gathered to him again and again, as was his custom, he taught them. And Pharisees came up and, in order to test him, asked, 'Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife?'" So it's important to understand the context of the question that the Pharisees are asking here. We need to understand that divorce was very common even in Israel. Now, we would think that, oh, those Jewish people, they're very strict about, you know, when you can observe the Sabbath and all those different little rules. But relating to marriage, they were quite liberal, you might say. They were very permissive. And so divorce was very common in that society, even among the religious leaders, even among the Pharisees. The Pharisees were religious leaders of Israel. And yes, they understood the Old Testament teaching, but they were interpreting things in a way that allowed for divorce for any or every reason. And just like in Christianity today, there were different schools of thought. And so you might say there was one school of thought that was very permissive in terms of divorce. And this was led by a rabbi named Hillel. And Rabbi Hillel died about 20 years before this account, but his view was the prevailing view among the Jewish people. And basically, it said, you can divorce your wife for any and every reason, okay? Whether, you know, she doesn't cook very well, she yelled at you, you know, she didn't look pretty anymore, any kind of reason, okay? It was pretty much a blank check in terms of whatever you wanted to do. And so that obviously was the popular view, because people want to have a lot of freedom. They want to be able to do whatever they want to do. And so this was the most popular view. There was also a minority view led by Rabbi Shammai. And this view basically said, no, divorce is only permitted for one exception, and that is for adultery. Otherwise, there's no divorce, okay? And so, in this context, the Pharisees asked Jesus, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? And they were not seeking Jesus' expert opinion, right? They were not seeking information from Jesus, but as it says there, they were trying to test him. You see, they were trying to trap him. And the Pharisees did not believe that Jesus was the Messiah. They thought he was just a fake. And so they wanted to oppose him in any way that they can. And the context for this incident is probably within months, Jesus would be crucified. All right, so it's a very short period of time where they would have their, you might say, dreams fulfilled, and Jesus would be killed. But they certainly were trying to oppose Jesus as he was teaching the people. And so they realized that if Jesus took the permissive view, then the hardliners would be upset. They would say, oh, this person is not following the Bible, and that kind of thing. But if he took a very strict view, limiting divorce, then, you know, this would not be very popular, because people wanted that type of freedom. We also need to understand the geographical context of this story. It mentions here in the verse 1 that this was beyond the Jordan. That is, this was in an area called Perea, which is to the east of the Jordan River. So the Jordan River runs from north to south from the Sea of Galilee to the Dead Sea. All right, and so to the east of it was this area called Perea. And this was an area that was under the control of Herod Antipas. And you may say, I think I heard that name before. And he is the person, he was a very wicked ruler, and he saw his brother's wife, liked her, and so he instead divorced his wife and married her, all right, and committed adultery with her. And not only that, but the wife, this new wife, was also a close relative of his as well. So he was, and John the Baptist called him out on that, and eventually lost his head, was beheaded because of that. So this incident is taking place where Herod Antipas was in control. And so maybe they were also asking Jesus, the Pharisees were asking Jesus this question so that they could get him into trouble, basically. To say, oh yeah, divorce is bad. People commit adultery, this is wrong, etc., etc. And so this would also get him in trouble with Herod Antipas as well. So that's sort of the context of the story. So contrary to what some of us may think, divorce was very common in that society. You know, it's, even though they were strict about lots of other things, the prevailing view was you could get divorced for whatever reason that you want. And that's pretty much the way it is in our society, right? There's, you know, certainly different reasons that people might have, but really you don't even have to have a reason. You just need to apply for it. And so that's the context. The second major point is that we see here is that Jesus' affirmation of the permanence of marriage. The affirmation of the permanence of marriage. And we see this as we read in verses 3 and following. He answered them, "What did Moses command you?" And they said, "Moses allowed a man to write a certificate of divorce and to send her away." And Jesus said to them, "Because of your hardness of heart, he wrote you this commandment." So Jesus responded to their question, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife, by referring them to God's Word, to what Moses had written, because he was the writer of the first five books, the Pentateuch, in the Old Testament. And we believe that the Bible, God superintended Moses to write what he wrote in those first five books. And they responded by saying, "Moses allowed a man to write a certificate of divorce and to send her away." Now, it seems that they are referring to a passage in Deuteronomy chapter 24. And I'm not going to take time to read that passage. You could kind of look at it. But it does make reference to when a person divorces and gives a person a certificate of divorce. And then basically the passage says, if this divorce occurs and then this person marries someone else and that person divorces her, then the first husband cannot marry the original wife. Okay? So you might say, well, what's the point of that? Well, I guess it's to prevent a situation where the husband will say, you know, I'm married to this woman, but I kind of like this other one, you know? And maybe I'll try her for a while. And if I don't like her, I can always go back to the first one, you know, kind of, you know, scenario. And so basically this the only command in Deuteronomy 24 in that passage is you can't marry this person again. All right. So the person has to think hard and, you know, seriously about, gee, do I really want a divorce? And it certainly mentions a certificate of divorce. And so in the Jewish society, only men could divorce the women. All right. Now, later on, you'll see that Jesus talks about the situation where the women could divorce the man. And that's Roman society. All right. They could do that. And we'll see that Mark includes that because he's writing to a Roman audience. But, you know, in this situation, he's talking particularly to the men. And the fact that they should give them a certificate of divorce. That is, if the biblical reason was only for adultery, then sometimes the woman who got divorced would have a stigma of adultery attached to her. So therefore, if you gave her a certificate of divorce, it kind of legitimized, you know, in some sense, so that she could get remarried if possible. Now, all of this is sort of saying, oh, so divorce is allowed. Yes, it was allowed, but Jesus clearly says this is not the original intent. All right? The original intent is for marriage to be permanent. But because of the hardness of your heart, he allowed certain things and he controlled, you might say, divorce. He tried to minimize the effects of divorce with certain rules, knowing that some people are going to disobey what he's going to say. Okay? So that's the situation. But the main part of it is that he wants to stress the permanence of the marriage relationship. And he begins this with verse 6. He says, from the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. Now, the quote in verse 6 is from Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, talking about how God made them male and female. And, you know, it's interesting that this talks about, you know, in some sense, relates to the gay marriage issue, right? Because here it's defining what marriage is. It's talking about male and female, about two people. It could talk about the polygamy issue. And then there were people in the Bible that practiced polygamy. But that certainly was not God's original plan. It was a perversion of his plan. And so it begins by quoting Genesis 1:27, God made them female, and then he goes on in verse 7 to draw from Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. That's the biblical definition of marriage. And it starts by a person leaving their father and mother. Now, you know, the parent-child relationship is one of the most important and intense relationships, right? I mean, certainly as you see a mother and father taking care of babies and dealing with diapers and lack of sleep and all that kind of stuff, there's a lot of commitment that's involved in the parent-child relationship. There's great love that is there. But here it's saying the marriage relationship supersedes that, all right? That you're leaving your father and mother and cleaving to your wife, holding fast to your wife. And so some problems in marriage is that some people never leave their father and mother. Now, they may physically do it. They live in a different house. They live with their wife. But mentally, emotionally, and all that kind of stuff, they're still like, oh, you know, the parents just are under, they're under their parents, you might say, control. And so they need to leave that relationship. Not that you don't care for them any longer, but your allegiance is to your wife or your husband. It's not to your own parents. And so it talks about holding fast to his wife. And so it's talking about bringing them together into a union that they become one flesh. Okay? And certainly it's talking about the sexual nature of marriage, but beyond that as well, there's a unity that is there. So that Jesus comments on that quotation. So you notice the different quotation marks among Genesis 2:24, but after that, Jesus says, so they are no longer two, but one flesh. So he's talking about how the two shall become one. And so, in one, the assumption is that this is a indivisible, you know, unit that is there. It's not something intended to be taken apart. And verse 9, he goes on to say, what therefore God has joined together, let not man separate. So it's saying, whose the idea is this? Whose idea? It's God. God joined them together. Okay? Therefore, God has joined together. So if you're divorcing, you're opposing what God's intent is, right? It says, let not man separate. Okay? So all of this points to the permanence of the marriage relationship. It's not something like getting a roommate, right? I mean, you know, sometimes people in school, and they say, oh, I have a roommate, and then, you know, you have an arrangement, you live in the same apartment building, whatever, but, you know, sometimes you get along, sometimes you don't get along, you know, and after a while, circumstances change, and then you find a new roommate, right? And you go to someone else, and marriage is not to be seen that way. It's not something casual. It's something that should last a lifetime. And so, and Jesus goes on to reinforce this in verses 10 through 12. And in the house, the disciples asked him again about this matter, and he said to them, whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her. And if she divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery. And so what Jesus, you know, the disciples asked Jesus this question, you might say, behind closed doors. They were saying, oh, you know, the prevailing view in our society is that divorce can be for anything, right? And now Jesus is saying something quite different. And so so Jesus says, whoever divorces his wife commits and marries another commits adultery. And so he's saying, if you are divorced for illegitimate reasons, and we're going to talk about the exceptions in a second, but if you're not, if it's not for those exceptions, if you divorce your wife and marry another, you're committing adultery, because God sees that you're still married to the first person. All right, that you're not divorced, even though you may call yourself divorced. But from God's eyes, the old marriage, you might say, the original marriage is still valid. Okay, that's what he's trying to say. Again, talking about the permanence of the marriage relationship, and that goes against how people see marriage today in our society, where people see it as a very casual thing, and you're not married for as long as you both shall live. You're married as long as you're happy. And if you're not happy, then you can go on and go get someone else, right? And that's the prevailing view in that ancient society, and probably the view in our society as well. And so the permanence of the marriage relationship. And yet, we recognize that there is sin in our world. And so that brings us to my third point, God's allowances for human frailties. And human frailties is a nice way of saying our sinfulness, right? Our ugly sinfulness. And certainly Jesus quotes from Genesis chapter 1 about creation. He quotes from Genesis chapter 2 talking about what marriage is all about. But if you read the Bible, you know Genesis chapter 3 talks about the fall. That is, where Adam and Eve disobeyed God, and sin entered into the world. And as sin entered into the world, it messed up so many different things, in even marriage. All right, it didn't eliminate marriage, but it certainly had a great effect on it. Okay, so that God had to allow for certain things in His mercy and His grace. And certainly in Genesis chapter 3:16, it talks about the curse. And the part here is talking about the curse that was given to Eve, the woman. And it says, to the woman, he said, I will surely multiply your pain in childbearing, and in pain you shall bring forth children. And all those people who are mothers, I'm sure, would say, yes, amen. And, you know, and I as a father don't know it, but I can understand. But it goes on, and this is God speaking, your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. Now, when I used to first read it, I used to think, that's kind of curious. Your desire shall be for your husband. And I used to think that that was the desire for the wife for the husband. But if you do the Greek, Hebrew analysis of the verb and how it's used in other places, particularly in relationship to the story of Cain and Abel, the story is basically this desire is not a desire to be attracted to this husband, but a desire to dominate him. Okay? A desire to control. So your desire shall be to control or your husband, but he shall rule over you. Okay? So this is basically the basis for what we would call the battle of the sexes. Okay? John MacArthur, a pastor, wrote the following: "There's going to be a battle in the house. As a woman seeks to be independent, seeks to be dominant, seeks her will, seeks her way, and as the man tries to control the revolt, both are fallen. It gets ugly. And we know it as the collision between woman's liberation and male chauvinism. It's conflict in the home because the woman's fallen nature is cursed with selfishness and strong will, strong desire, and wants her own way and feels rebellious under this. And as she has a rebellious attitude, the man has ungracious, unkind, dominating attitude as well. And this is the conflict that leads to divorce." And later on he writes, "Instead of her willingly, graciously submitting to him and he tenderly, compassionately leading her, she has a desire to dominate him and he has an overbearing reaction by over-dominating her. Conflict comes in because of the curse of corruption as a result of the fall. This makes divorce an issue because ultimately the conflict can come to the level where people cannot stand to be together anymore, and that leads to separation and divorce." And so we need to understand that marriage, as beautiful as it seems, certainly in a wedding ceremony and all those kinds of things, is a partnership of two people that are sinners, okay? That they are going to be two sinners that are going to be close proximity, living together, and that can cause all kinds of issues. And, you know, maybe after reading this, some people may say, that sounds pretty bad, marriage. But marriage can be a good thing, okay? I mean, God was the one who instituted marriage, and so it can be a wonderful experience. It can be a fulfilling experience. And, a week ago, last Sunday, my wife and I celebrated our 41st, I make sure I get that right, 41st anniversary, all right? So we've been married 41 years, right? And I would say, yes, it's been great, it's been wonderful, but I can't tell you it's been, heaven on earth, all the time. There have been lots of challenges, there are lots of issues, and I think I've shared in the past how even in my first year of marriage, I was thinking, we were attending Dallas Seminary at the time, and I was thinking, gee, I may be the first student to get a divorce. That's how serious it was, all right? And God had mercy. We worked on our marriage. We humbled ourselves before God. And God blessed us with 41 years of marriage. And it's not easy. It's something that we constantly have to work on all the time. And yet, it's a blessing from the Lord. And yet, on the other hand, I also have counseled people who have very difficult marriages, who have literally said to me, this is like hell on earth. Okay? That's how bad marriages can be. All right? And, you might say the root problem is our sinfulness, the sinfulness before the Lord. And so God, in His mercy, I believe, has allowed two exceptions to the permanence of marriage. And there are some people who say there's no such thing as divorce, you know, biblically. That there's no, but, you know, I believe that the Bible teaches there are two.